Anna.
Meryl.
Hello.
Hi, Hannah. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good evening.
Hello.
I hope everyone is well.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
So we are on verse 461, section 36a of the Parsha Lech Lecha from the Sulam commentary. And we'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kud Shabar Ishkin Te Bidkilu Urchimu Udkilu Udkilu Urchimu Le'akta L'shem Yud He Bavat He Yehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asot Torah Mitzvah V'ayinu Amadunai Elohinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadenu Karenei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadenu Karenehu. Verse 461. We eat the Amre Ashira na ledidi da Abraham. Keda ma ledidi the veiti the Abraham. Yarit Yeruta the Achsanat Pulata. Da Valma de Amina. The translation, there are those who say that now will I sing to my friend, refers to Abraham. As it is written, what was my friend to do in my house? Which refers to Abraham. So my friend here also refers to Abraham. And Abraham inherited the portion of this field, which is Malchut, that is called here, a vineyard. And he recites a song of my beloved for his vineyard. But Rabbi Abba said, what I have said that it is Isaac is indeed so. My commentary, the pasuk is clear as written with Rabbi Ashlag's comments. The I is Hashem who sings to all three forefathers as a friend to them. The question is, do you want to be a friend back? Questions, comments, thoughts. Oh, that got everybody excited.
I'm not going to want to stop and talk at one time. I want to sing.
Anna, I have to mute, so I'm sorry. I have to mute.
It's okay.
Noisy here. All right. It's very noisy here. So.
We're not hearing the noise, so but it's up to you. And Hannah, I guess you're the only one to talk tonight. There's only two people on, I believe.
Okay. It's Miriam.
Oh, Miriam's on, so it's three people.
Okay, Miriam's on, that's good.
Well, I think it referred back several verses back with the idea that Abraham is a chariot from Chesed, and he perfected it so much that, I mean, for me, I see that, you know, he goes over to the other side of Gabor with Isaac, who is the friend and who is on the left column. As far as, I mean, I can see the code word vineyard being linked to Malchut. And, of course, I always think of those verses in Song of Solomon. I don't know if I'm trying to mention this, but, you know, I was a little bit unfamiliar with that word Karen having to do with song, and the word kept popping in my head, and then I realized where I had heard that word, and that was having to do with the horn of that's so misinterpreted with having to do with Moses having horns, you know, that misinterpretation. So these verses are sticking through the head, you know, through your thoughts during the week. I just think coming to know Hashem as your friend, like I mentioned yesterday, you know, we've seen Hashem in so many different ways of human patterning. But to me, with the friend, you know that he would be the greatest friend you could ever have.
No question.
So, you know, so I just think it's helped me a lot with not letting bad news to know that I can count on my friend, because we both have a covenant and we know that's the Brit Milah. So all of that working together, friend and covenant, and I mean, whatever title you would want to give to the expression, just, I don't know, to me it's just a deeper understanding. So this,
it is.
This has really been.
It's also the idea of the vineyard and singing a song to the beloved for his vineyard. That's a verse, doesn't say, but that's a verse coming from Song of Songs. And the question being asked by Jeremiah, what has my friend to do in my house? It's all related to different words in the relationship to the chariots, so which prompted my comment about the all three forefathers are friends to Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a look at verse 462.
Okay.
Shira dodi likarmo daku chabrihu dikre dodi diktiv dodi sach viadom yididi achid dodi dikar Umneya itnata erem dikti kerem haya ledidi. In the verse, a song of my beloved for his vineyard. My beloved refers to the Holy One, blessed be he, who is called my beloved, as it is written. My beloved is white and ruddy. When my friend is united with my beloved, he is a male. And then from this, with the illumination of the left column of Bina, he planted a vineyard, which is Malchut, and the Nukva of Zeran Pin, as it is written, my beloved has a vineyard, because Malchut is constructed by the left column of Bina. This pasuk is clear as written with Rabbi Ashlag's comments. Learn that Malchut is constructed by the left column, and this is especially true in this second of the 7,000-year cycle. Can you tell why this is especially the second cycle? Questions, comments, thoughts? The verse is expressing code words. It's explaining it, and you know, it, it's really referring to the previous verse as well. But it's basically defining the code words. The vineyard is Malchut. The song is coming from Bina, who blows the shofar, and all of these different aspects that we've learned from one verse or another throughout the Zohar. And the problem is that we forget those verses and we forget the code words. But what's important, if we remember them, then the verses start to become clear to us.
Well, I would suspect that white is Chesed, right column, and ruddy is Gevurah, left column.
That's correct. Correct.
I do remember that we, you know, even though we've always associated Gevurah with being feminine, or Bina, not Bina. I don't remember what the verse, what the reason was. So I've already slipped back on that. And I've had a hectic, so, you know, I forgive myself.
We should always forgive ourselves for something that we think we've learned, but we forget.
I have to go back and kind of reread a second time before it kind of sticks with me. And I'm trying to see words that I recognize, and so many times the same word in Aramaic is a Hebrew word, and then trying to read the verse, you know, and listen at the same time to the translation.
It's a lot.
There's a validation. I'm about to get my Excel book out.
I'm
empathizing because it's like there's so much going through my head. It's like I gotta get my Excel sheets out and make categories and categories of categories and categories of categories. And that just was going through my head so much last night that even that, it's like, well, then it's like having file cabinets of file cabinets of file cabinets, and then you're gonna get lost again. Just like when I remember when I first found your website, I thought you guys were crazy how you made your website. Like, what is this? Because I couldn't find anything. And then now I'm trying to figure all these things out, because it's like you've got the microcosm and the macrocosm. And so, like if you've ever had a big library, you have to cross-code everything so that you can make everything connected to everything, so you know where to look to get this information and that information to understand the whole of it, but then to be able to focus on a piece of it but not get lost, not lose the meaning of the piece of it within the whole of the context of the whole of it, or just, you know, one of the 10 worlds of the 10 worlds of the 10 worlds of it. So, yeah. I don't have a long enough life, this one life here. I gotta focus.
You have to remember that I'm gonna live at least 300 more years, and you're gonna stick around to prove me right.
But I'm already tired of being here, and I'm tired of the humans, even though I am one. It's such a dilemma, and the light body is so much more fun.
I can't argue with that statement.
I could mail you a stack of 5x7 cards that I would take the Zohar and try to, you know, make notes on the words and everything, and then finally I just gave up.
Let me give you some structure to this. First off, the sages in the Talmud tell us that you cannot learn unless you read the same thing, study the same thing at least 101 times.
Well, that's what men do. That's what my husband does. He did that whole Gomorrah thing twice. now.
Well, that's only 14 years.
The Talmud?
No, you don't have, I'll tell you a story about, I was just learning Kabbalah, and I had met a student friend in a kosher restaurant for probably the second time I'd eaten in a kosher restaurant. And we were talking the Kabbalah, and typically loudly. And there was a nice Orthodox rabbi from Detroit who was very upset with us because we were studying Kabbalah, and obviously we weren't observant, so we shouldn't be doing that. And he came over and explained that, you know, we have to learn in the appropriate way of step by step. And my friend, without batting an eye, said to the rabbi, "Rabbi, you're absolutely correct. But I've spent the last 300 years studying the Gemara, and it's time for me to move on."
There we go.
The rabbi turned around because he had nothing to say to us.
Right.
So don't worry that you're studying the Kabbalah because without the background, because eventually the way it works is that all of a sudden something will show up in your head, or your husband will say something that he had studied in the Gemara, and all of a sudden things come together. Because the way that both the Talmud and the Zohar are written, it isn't logical. It can't be logical because the human mind is not logical. We pretend it's logical. We have this feeling, we have this emotion, and we become reactive. And then we justify the reaction following some form of logic. But the reality is our emotion, our reactive behavior is never logical. It is just being human. And the way the Zohar is written, you'll go from one subject to another, back and forth, and you try and follow it, and it's circular, but it's not circular. It's logical, it's not logical. And it just is. And ultimately, at some point, it clicks. And all these words come together, and it makes sense to you. And then you're really crazy because you can't explain it to anybody.
Right. So I'm like right in the middle, and I blame you for everything now. You have me trapped in the physical world. I'm doing this in the physical world. That's the problem, because I'm trying to understand the experiences I'm having. And they're Kabbalistic experiences, but I don't have all of the right.
Yeah, you don't have the vocabulary to explain it. And when you realize that you really cannot explain it to another human being, they may have exactly the same experiences, but their experiences are still theirs. It's different. I mean, you're welcome to call me and you can talk about it. I can help you with it.
I don't want to, it's like play pretend, it's like it's not real. At least when I was 6 years old with my best friend, we both had shared experience, so I was her witness and she was mine.
But the reality was you were both experiencing it, the same thing in different ways.
But we could verify it.
Again, you were using logic. It's not what the experience was.
Experience
is what it is. You accept the experience, you leave it to your unconscious to sort it out, and then when your unconscious has completed sorting it out, it'll tell your conscious level something, and everything will make sense.
And that's what I used to tell my patients. They used to look at me so funny. So I can understand that, if I don't have to deal with it in the physical world. But I knew nothing about orbs. I did not know anything about orbs. I wasn't thinking about UFOs. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't like believing this or believing that. I was just doing my job in the forensic world of psychology, right? You know,
right.
Is this guy going to do that again? And when I saw those orbs, I went to figure out from a purely physics, like NASA, I was looking up NASA and looking up the military, like there's a logical explanation for this. There was nothing until I started seeing the pictures of the UFOs, and then there was a gazillion pictures of what I saw. So it wasn't like I had a belief in them before I saw them. I didn't even know they existed. And then I found out a gazillion people have seen the exact same. So I get the creation of how things get created. That sounds stupid, but for me that's really simple. How things get created in this world, that it's a co-creation of a collective, right? I get that, so there's enough of us.
It's a co-creation of a collective experience.
Right, but it's all there, and there's enough of us to say, even take pictures of it, so it's there. So I should be able to say, okay, I'm having this experience. There must be a bunch of literature, a bunch of people. This must be a thing, like a table is a thing in the physical world. If the orbs are a thing now in the physical world. They have become a thing.
Yes.
They're manifested now.
And if you go on the internet, you'll find all kinds of those experiences, photographs and documented experiences as best people are able to explain it. But the issue truly is you experience a picture. You don't experience logic. But you're trying
right.
to use logic to explain it.
And their experiences aren't enough for me. Like, what they think they are isn't enough for me. And it's not just the orbs. It's just a lot of different weird things. I mean, and I'm not schizophrenic because I tested myself.
No, I understand.
I don't hear voices outside my head, only inside my head.
I have to explain to you how to find your guardian angel, or for lack of a better word, we'll say the guardian angel. And then you can ask those questions that you need to ask to get it clarified, and you'll get answers, just not necessarily at the moment that you ask the question.
Okay.
I once asked a question, and I waited 13 years for my answer.
Wow.
Their time frame is not our time frame.
I only got one truth, and that was in the other in a different dimension, and I asked the entity to prove to me that it was real and that it wasn't a dream, and that entity did prove to me. But that was the only proof I ever had of anything. But I wasn't crazy.
You have to be prepared to ask the right questions. So, and that's part of Hebrew letters help us achieve.
Okay.
Which is why I read the Aramaic for the consciousness of the letters. Because without it, this stuff, it just isn't logical. It jumps around and it's very clear when it becomes clear, but until then, it's just mud.
Were they thinking more in pictures at the time when they were writing?
We always think in pictures.
But I mean the original Hebrew.
The original Hebrew is a picture. Those letters are mm-hmm. The letters are pictures.
Okay.
You know, I do a class on Thursday mornings, which you can join by, it's 10 a.m. and it may not be good for you, but there's a recording you can get. And that class is really talking about the energy of the letters and the mystical, for lack of a better word, the mystical aspects of the letters. And, I'm building it as a way to improve your Hebrew, but you know, and you can go back and find the Aleph in the recordings links and start with the Alephs and just move forward. We're on the, I believe it's the 12th or 13th class. So, you know, we still got a long way to go.
I apologize. I've had that two days of time, and I have to apologize.
No, you don't have to apologize. It's the passion that we enjoy.
I feel better, though. I thank you guys.
We've all been there. We've all been confused and not being able to understand it.
It's like I've got this teacher who'll stick wings on me and then say, sit in the corner.
No, I don't do that this week. Well, we did two verses today. That's a lot, so we're out of time. Okay. This class was only a half hour because if we did it longer, we'd all go crazy.
Thank you.
You all have a good evening. And tonight is even worse. The 7 o'clock class is studying the Tikkun Zohar, which is basically a condensed version of the Zohar. And it's on a higher level. You'll never get there, but you feel uplifted just by listening to the class. You have no idea what's going on. But the fact that you don't know it feels good.
Well, that kind of gets me off the hook. I can let my intuition just kick it.
That's exactly what you have to do.
Okay. Fine.
Just if you think, oh, gosh, I don't understand this. I don't understand this. Then you get a lesson that you think you understand. It's almost like you're reading English. So just about when you give up.
I'm okay when I'm floating around. I'm okay until I have an experience that just kind of shakes me up and I'm just like, why did I, you know, what, like there's no point in the experience that I can decipher. It's like, what does
that have to do?
If it's in the physical world and it doesn't have anything to do with the physical world, then why did I have it? So it doesn't make sense. So I get stuck on those things.
And when those things happen, you, having a teacher that can help draw it out of you, you'll find out that they've given you the explanation for why you just didn't understand it. And many times you don't remember it. And so the process we'll go through will draw that out of you. Because it's there.
Okay.
You have a good evening, all of you. Shalom Gadol.
Shalom. Thank you.